The Supreme. Sometimes, long, long ago, there was a great assembly of great sages on the bank of the river Saraswati, and as usual, they performed a great sacrifice of the name Satra Yagga. Usually, in such a big assembly, all the great sages discuss many empiric subject matters and philosophical topics. For some, there was a question among them that within this material world, the three predominating deities, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, they are directing all the affairs of this material world. But who is the supreme? This question was raised. So after much discussion, the great sage of the name Bhrigu, who is directly the son of Lord Brahma, was deputed to test all these three predominating deities and report to the assembly who is the greatest. Great sage Bhrigu Muni, that being deputed, he first of all went to his father in the Brahma Loka, where Lord Brahma is residing. Three deities are controllers of three qualities, namely the quality of goodness, passion, and ignorance. The test of the deities, as it was planned by the great sages, and as it was decided to debut the great saint Bhrigu, you are simply to test which of the predominating deities is possessing the quality of goodness in full. Otherwise, the test was made on the principle of testing the quality of goodness in each and every predominating deity. So when Bhrigu Muni reached to his father, Lord Brahma, he wanted to test whether he has got the quality of goodness. Just to verify this, Bhrigu Muni purposely did not offer any respect to his father, either by obeisances or by offering some prayers. It is the duty of a son or a disciple to approach the father or the spiritual master and offer respect, reciting some prayer. But Bhrigu Muni did not do anything purpose, just to see the reaction of Lord Brahma on this negligence on the part of his son, Bhrigu Muni. Lord Brahma, on the impudency of his son, was very much angry, and he showed some signs on his person which definitely proved that he was very, very angry upon the behavior of his son. He was even prepared to condemn his son by cursing him. But because he has done, Lord Brahma controlled his anger by his great intelligence. This means, although Lord Brahma was prominent in the quality of passion, he had the power of controlling it. Lord Brahma's controlling his anger is exemplified like the fire and water. Water is a production from fire, but at the same time, fire can be extinguished with water. Clearly, although Lord Brahma was very angry out of his quality of passion, still he could control such passionate exhibition of anger because Bhrigu Muni was his personal son. After this, Bhrigu Muni directly went to the Kailas planet where Lord Shiva resides. Bhrigu Muni happens to be a brother of Lord Shiva. Therefore, as soon as Bhrigu Muni approached Lord Shiva, was very glad, and he personally got up to embrace him. While Lord Shiva was approaching Bhrigumani, he refused to embrace his brother, saying, "My dear brother, you are always very impure. You smear your body with the ashes of fire, but you are not very clean. Please do not touch me." And Bhrigumani refused to embrace his brother on the ground that Lord Shiva was very impure. The latter became very much angry upon him. When somebody commits some offense, he said that such offense can be committed either by body or the mind or by speeches. The first offense committed by Bhrigumani in relationship with Lord Brahma was offense within the mind. The second offense committed by Bhrigumani towards Lord Shiva was the offense by speeches. That is to say, he insulted Lord Shiva directly, speaking about his unclean habits. Lord Shiva heard this because Lord Shiva is prominent in the quality of ignorance. Immediately, his eyes become red with anger, and not only that, could not control that anger, took up his trident and was prepared to kill immediately Bhrigumani. Lord Shiva's wife, Parvati, was present. She also fixed the three qualities. Therefore, her name is Trigonomai. She saved the situation by developing his quality of goodness. Immediately, she fell down on the feet of Lord Shiva and with her sweet words, stopped him, killing Bhrigumani on the spot. Thus, after being saved from the anger of Lord Shiva, he went directly to the Shetadvipa planet where Lord Vishnu was lying on the bed of flowers, accompanied by his wife, the goddess of fortune, who was engaged in massaging his lotus feet. Then, Bhrigumani purposefully committed the greatest sin by his bodily activities. As referred to above, it may be remembered, the first offense committed by Bhrigumani was mental. The second offense committed by Bhrigumani was vocal, and the third offense he committed was corporal. All these defined offenses are greater in degree consecutively. Offense committed within the mind is positive. The same committed by word is comparative, and the same committed by bodily action is superlative. So, Bhrigumani committed the superlative degree offense by putting his leg on the chest of the Lord in the presence of Goddess of Fortune. Of course, Lord Vishnu is all merciful. He did not take any offense out of the activities of Bhrigumani because he was great Brahmin. In this sense, a Brahmin is to be excused even he commits sometimes offense. This example is shown by Lord Vishnu. But it is said, from this time, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is not very favorably disposed towards the Brahmin. The Brahmanas are therefore generally very poor without being predicted by the goddess of fortune. This incident of Bhrigumani touching the chest of Lord Vishnu with his leg, certainly a great offense. But Lord Vishnu is so great that he did not find that offense of a Brahmin. So-called Brahmanas of the Kali Yuga sometimes get very much pride that they can touch the chest of Lord Vishnu by their feet. Fact is, however, they are different. But when Bhrigumani touched the chest of Lord Vishnu by his feet, it was the greatest offense, but it is the magnanimity of Lord Vishnu that he did not that very seriously of the offense committed by Bhrigumani. At first, Lord Vishnu, instead of being angry or cursing Bhrigumani, immediately got up from his bed along with his wife, goddess of fortune, and offered their respectful obeisances to the Brahmin, began to speak as follows. My dear Brahmin, it is a great fortune for me that you have come here. Please, therefore, sit down on this cushion for a few minutes. My dear Brahmana, I am very much sorry that when you entered my apartment, I could not receive you properly. So it was a great offense on my part. I beg your pardon to excuse me for this offense. You are so pure and great that you can purify even the pilgrimages by the washed water of your feet. Therefore, I request you to purify the Kuntu planet where I am living along with my associates. And your father, the great sage, I know that he is very soft like lotus flower and my chest is as hard as the thunderbolt. I'm therefore afraid if you have not felt some pain by touching my chest with your feet. Let me therefore touch your feet to pacify the pain you have suffered by touching my chest. Then the Lord Vishnu began to massage the feet of Bhrigumani. The Lord continued to say, addressing Bhrigumani, my dear Lord, just now my chest has become sanctified on account of your feet being touched on it, and I am now assured that Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi, will be very glad to live there perpetually. Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi's another name is Chanchala. She does not stay at any place for a long time. Therefore, we see one rich man, after some time or after a few generations, family becomes poorer. Sometimes we see a poor man's family become very rich. But this Chanchala word is applicable to this material world. Whereas in Vaikuntha planet, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, eternally lives under the lotus feet of the Lord. But because she is famous as Chanchala, so Lord Narayan indicated that she may not be living for good on his chest. But because the chest is now touched by the feet of Bhrigumani, it is now sanctified and there is no chance of Goddess of Fortune going away from there. Bhrigumani, however, could understand his position and the Lord's position, and he was struck with wonder by the behavior of the Supreme Personality of God. And out of gratitude towards the Lord, his voice became choked up not to reply the words of the Lord. Simply, tears were gliding down his eyes, and as such, he could not speak anything. He stood still for the Lord. After this taste experience of Bhrigumani, he came back to the assembly of great sages on the bank of river Saraswati and described his experience in relation with Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. After hearing him with great attention, all the sages concluded that Lord Vishnu is certainly the greatest of all the predominant deities. In this meeting of great sages, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Brahmavadinam. This Brahmavadinam means those who are talking on the absolute truth, but not have come into conclusion. Generally, these Brahmavadis are the impersonalists, or those who are students of the Vedas. Therefore, it is to be understood that all the sages gathered there, they were serious students of Vedic literature, but they did not come into any definite conclusion who is the supreme absolute personality of God. And this incident of Bhrigu Muni's meeting all the three predominating deities, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu, now they came to the conclusion that Lord Vishnu is the supreme true personality of God. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam in this connection that the sages were astonished after hearing the details from Bhrigu Muni. Actually, it is astonishing because Lord Brahma was immediately agitated. Lord Shiva also immediately became agitated. But Lord Vishnu, in spite of his being kicked by the leg of Bhrigu Muni, he was not the least agitated. The comparison is just like a small lamp or lightning forces become agitated by a little breeze. But the greatest lamp or the greatest illuminating source, the sun, is never moved even by the greatest hurricane. One's greatness has to be estimated. How much he is tolerant in provocating situation. The sages gathered there and thus concluded that if anyone wants actual peace at the same time, wants to become free from all fearfulness, one should take shelter to the lotus feet of Vishnu. If Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva could not maintain their peaceful attitude by slight provocation, how they can maintain peace and tranquility of their devotees? But so far, Lord Vishnu is concerned, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, that anyone who takes Lord Vishnu or Krishna as the supreme friend attains the highest perfection of peaceful life. The sages thus concluded that by following the principles of Vaishnava Dharma, one becomes actually perfect. Otherwise, if one follows all the religious principles of a particular sect and he does not become advanced in the matter of understanding the Supreme Personality of God as Vishnu, all such labor of love becomes fruitless. To execute religious principle means one has come to the platform of perfect knowledge. If one has come to the platform of perfect knowledge, then he will be disinterested with material affairs. Perfect knowledge means to know one's own self and to know the Supreme Self. Supreme Self and individual self, although one in quality, they are different in quantity. Such analytical study of knowledge is perfect. Otherwise, simply to understand that I am not matter, I am spirit, is not perfect knowledge. Real religious principle is therefore devotional service or bhakti. That is, confirming the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that you give up all other religious principles and simply surrender unto me. Therefore, the term dharma applies only to the Vaishnava dharma or Bhagavad dharma, following which all other good qualities and advancement of life automatically become achieved. The highest perfectional knowledge is to know the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord cannot be understood by any other process of religion except by devotional service. Therefore, the immediate result of perfect knowledge is achieved by executing devotional service. After attainment of knowledge, when one becomes disinterested in the material world, that is not dry philosophical speculation. The devotees become disinterested in the matter of material world, not
by simply understanding, but by practical experience, when the devotee realizes the effect of association of the Supreme Lord, naturally he hates the association of so-called society, friendship and love. This detachment is not dry, but it is due to achievement of higher status of life by relishing a transcendental mellow. It is further stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in this connection that after attainment of such knowledge and detachment for material sense gratification, one's advancement in the eight kinds of opulences, as they are supposed to be attained by mystic yoga practice, namely anima, loghima, prapti, siddhi, etc. Such perfections are also achieved without any different effort. Example is Maharaj Ambarish. He was not a mystic yogi, but he was a great devotee. But the great mystic yogi, Durvasa, became defeated in the presence of a devotional attitude of Maharaj Ambarish. In other words, a devotee does not require to practice the mystic yoga system to achieve some power. The power is behind him by the grace of the Lord. It is exactly like a small child which surrenders to a powerful father. All the power of the father is behind the small child. And when a person becomes famous as the devotee of the Lord, such reputation is never to be extinguished. Lord Chaitanya, while discussing with Ramananda Raya, posted, what is the greatest reputation? Ramananda Raya replied that a person who is reputed as the perfect devotee of Lord Krishna, his reputation is perfect. The conclusion is therefore that Vishnu Dharma, or the religion of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is meant for persons who are thoughtful. By proper execution of thoughtfulness, one comes to the stage of thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead means one becomes uncontaminated from all sorts of faulty association in the material world. Thus, such thoughtful devotees become peaceful. The world is in disturbed condition on account of scarcity of such peaceful devotees in the human society. Without being a devotee, nobody can be equiposed to all living entities. A devotee is equally disposed to the animals, to the human beings, or to any living entity, because he sees every living entity as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. In the Isha Upanishad, it is clearly stated that one who has come to the stage of seeing equally all living entities, he does not hate anyone in preference to others. The devotee, therefore, has no hankering for possessing more than what he requires. Devotees are therefore called akinchana. In any condition of life, a devotee is satisfied. It is said about them that a devotee is equipoise. Either he is in the hell or he is in the heaven. Devotee is callous to any other subject except his engagement in devotional service. Such mode of life is called the highest perfectional state by which one can be elevated to the spiritual world, back to home, back to garden. Such devotees are especially attracted by the first grade material quality, goodness. A qualified Brahmin is the symbolic representation of this goodness. Therefore, a devotee is attached to the Brahminical stage of life. It's not very much interested in the stage of passion or ignorance, although All these three qualities are emanating from the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. The devotees are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in this connection as Nipuna Buddhaya, which means the devotees are the most intelligent class of man. But without being influenced by attachment or hatred, the devotee lives very peacefully without being agitated by the influence of passion and ignorance. It may be questioned here why a devotee should be attached to the goodness quality of the material world if he is transcendental to the all qualities. The answer is, in the modes of material nature, there are different kinds of people existing. Those who are in the modes of material nature of ignorance, they are called rakshasas. Persons who are in the modes of passion are called asuras. And persons who are in the modes of goodness are called suras or demigods. Under the direction of the Supreme Lord, these three classes of men are there, created by the material nature. But the persons who are in the modes of goodness, their chances greater than others are being elevated in the spiritual world, back to home, back to Godhead. Next verse. In this way, all the sages who assembled on the bank of river Saraswati to discuss the conclusion, who is the supreme predominating deity, all of them became free from all doubt about Vishnu worship, and then after that all of them became engaged in devotional service, and thus they achieved the desired result, back to home, back to Godhead. Next verse. Those who are actually anxious to get liberated from this material entanglement would better accept the conclusion given by Sri Sukadev Goswami. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that Srimad Bhagavatam becomes very, very conducive to hear because it is spoken by Sukadev Goswami. The same fact is again confirmed by Suta Goswami, that anyone who is traveling aimlessly within this material world, if he cares to hear the nectarine words spoken by Sukadev Goswami, suddenly such person will have the right conclusion that simply by discharging devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one would be able to stop the fatigue caused by migrating from one material body to another perpetually. In other words, one will be fixed up in the loving devotional service to Vishnu. Certainly, he will be able to get relief from this material journey of life. And the process is very simple. One has got skipped off ears, and one has to give simply oral reception to the sweet words spoken by Sukadev Goswami in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Another conclusion is that we should never place Lord Vishnu on the same level along with other demigods, including Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma. If we do so according to Bhagavad Puran, then immediately we become the category of the atheist. In the Vedic literature known as Harivamsa, it is also stated that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is to be worshipped. Hare Krishna Mahamantra or any such Vishnu mantra is always to be chanted. The second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma says in quotation, either Lord Shiva or myself, we are all engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to act in different capacity under His direction. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is also stated that the only master is Krishna, and anyone in any category of life is only a servant of Krishna. Sukadev Goswami also narrated in this connection incident. Lord Krishna was present in order to draw our attention to the fact that among all Vishnu Tattva forms, Lord Krishna is 100% Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed by the Lord that there is no more superior truth beyond Krishna. Next paragraph. Once upon a time, a Brahmin's wife gave birth to a child, but unfortunately, the child, just after being born and touching the ground, immediately became dead. Then the Brahmin father took the dead child and went directly to the palace of the king in Dwarka. The Brahmin was very much upset on account of untimely death of a child in the presence of his young father and mother. Thus his mind became too much disturbed. Formerly, when there were responsible kings, it appears up to the time of Dwapara Yuga, when Lord Krishna was present, the responsible king was liable to be blamed on account of untimely death of a child in the presence of his parents. Similarly, a responsibility was there during the time of Lord Ramchandra, as we have explained in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The king was so much responsible to the comfort of the citizens that there was not even excessive heat and excessive cold. So here is an instance that a Brahmin, having a dead child, although he had no fault on his part, immediately went to the palace door, began to accuse the king as follows. The present king, Ugrasen, is envious of the Brahmins. The exact word used in this connection is Brahma, Visha. One who is envious of the Vedas, or one who is envious of a qualified Brahmin, or one who is envious of the Brahmin caste, he is called Brahma Disha. So the king was accused as Brahma Disha and falsely intelligent. The use of this particular word, Satatiya, means falsely intelligent. This word also used against the king. It means the executive head of the state must be very intelligent to see to the comforts of the citizens, but this king is not at all intelligent and still he has occupied the royal throne. Therefore, he is lupta. Lupta means greedy. In other words, a king or an executive head of a state should not occupy the exalted post of presidency or kingship if he is greedy and interested for his personal benefit. But it is natural that executive head becomes personally interested when he is too much attached to material enjoyment. For another particular word is used in this connection, Vishayatmana. When the Brahmin accused the king as Khatravandha, this Khatravandha means a person born in the family of Kshatriyas or royal order, but has no qualification of the king. Probably, he should be protecting to the Brahminical culture. He should be very much intelligent for the welfare of the citizens. He should not at all be greedy on account of his attachment to the material enjoyment. But if a person presenting himself as a Kshatriya royal order but has no such qualification, he is not called a Kshatriya, but called a Khatriya, Khatravandhu. Similarly, a Brahmin also, when he is born of a Brahmin father, but has no Brahminical qualification, he is also called Brahmavandhu or Vijavandhu. This means either a Brahmin or a Kshatriya is not accepted simply by birth, but has to qualify himself to the particular position, then he is accepted as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. Let the Brahmin accused the king that on account of his disqualification to become a king, his newly born baby was dead. Brahmin took it most unnatural, and therefore he accused king to be responsible for such untoward act. We find also in the Vedic history that if the Kshatriya king was thus irresponsible, sometimes the consulting board of the Brahmin content by a monarch would dethrone the king. Considering all these points, it appears that the monarchy in the Vedic civilization is a very responsible post. This Brahmin thus began to say to the Kodeshan that any person who offers respect or worship a king whose only business is enviousness, either killing animals in the forest hunting or killing the citizens on ground of criminal act without any self-control, possessing bad characteristics. If such king is worshipped or honored by the citizens would never be happy. They will remain fallen in poor condition of life, full of anxiety, aggrievement, and unhappy all the time. In the modern politics, although the monarchical post is abolished, the people do not take account of the president, how far he is responsible to the comforts of the citizens. This age of Kali, the executive head of a state, gets somehow other post to be elected on that exalted post. But the condition of the citizens continues to be full of anxieties, distress, unhappiness, and dissatisfaction. The Brahmin, however, had for the second time a dead child, and for the third time a dead child, up to the end of a ninth child. Every time he used to come to the front of the doorkeeper of the palace and used to accuse the king in his number, L.A. 42, Krishna, chapter 59, continues. On the ninth occasion of the Brahmin's accusing king of Dwarka, Arjuna happened to be present with Krishna, and he heard the incident that a Brahmin was accusing of not being protected by the king properly. He became a little inquisitive and approached the Brahmin. He said within quotation, "My dear Brahman, how is it that you say there is no protector in your country and there is no proper Kshatriya carrying the bows and arrows for protection of the citizens? Do you think that there is not even a so-called Kshatriya can carry the bows and arrows at least to make a show of protection? Do you think that all the royal personalities in this country, they are simply engaged with the Brahmins in the matter of performing sacrifices without any fuelless power?" In other words, Arjuna indicated that the Kshatriyas should not sit very comfortably on the pretext of being engaged in performing Vedic rituals only, but the Kshatriyas must be very active in the matter of protecting the citizens by chivalrous activity. The Brahmanas being engaged in spiritual activities, they are not expected to do something which requires physical endeavor. As the Brahmins especially require to be protected by the Kshatriyas without being disturbed in their higher occupational duty. As such, if the Brahmins feel unwanted separation from wife and children in the family, and the Kshatriyas do not take care of them, then such Kshatriya kings are to be considered as stage players in the theatrical stage when there are some dramatical performances. Somebody playing the part of a king. Nobody expects any benefit from such great king. Similarly, if the king or the executive head of the state cannot give protection to the creed of the social construction, such executive head or king is considered as showbox. Such king or executive head of the state simply live for their livelihood on the exalted post of being the chief of the state. My lord, I give you promise that I shall give protection to your children. And if I do not carry out my promise, or if I am unable to do so, then I promise also that I shall enter into blazing fire so that the sinful contamination which may have infected me will be counteracted. And hearing Arjuna speaking like that, the Brahmana replied as follows: "My dear Arjuna, here Lord Balaram is present, but he could not give protection to my children. Here Lord Krishna is also present. He also could not give any protection to my children. Besides them, there are many other heroes like Pradyumna and Anuruddha carrying the bows and arrows, and still they could not give protection to my children." The Brahmana directly hinted that the thing which was impossible to be done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how you could perform. It appeared to him impossible, but he indicated that Arjuna was promising something which was beyond his power, for he did not know how far he could perform a thing which was impossible for the Lordship. The Brahmin said that I consider your promise just like the promise of a child without an experience. I cannot put my faith on your promise.
Then Arjuna understood that Brahmin had not all faith on the Kshatriya king. Therefore he wanted to encourage him by speaking in a mood of criticizing his friend Lord Krishna and against Lord, while Lord Krishna and others were hearing him. He specifically attacked Krishna by saying that Sri Krishna, neither Brahman and neither Sankarsan, nor Krishna, nor Krishna's son, like Pratumna or Aniruddha. My name is Arjuna, and I carry the bow and arrows known as Gandimam. You cannot insult my prayer, because with my prayer I satisfied him, Lord Shiva. In the forest when both of us were engaged in hunting, I had some fight with Lord Shiva, who appeared before me as a hunter, and I satisfied him with my prayer, and he gave me full satisfaction. You have known as Vasupad Atra. Do not doubt about my evil-like activities. I shall bring your son back. Even I have to fight with the death personified, present God. Finally, Brahmin was assured by Arjuna in such exalting words. Somehow or other, he was convinced about the promise of Arjuna, and thus being assured, he went back home. In this way, when the Brahmin was faced with another delivery case of his wife, he began to chant, "My dear Arjuna, please come now and take my
child. Arjuna also, after hearing him immediately, he prepared himself after touching sunshine water for uttering the holy mantra to protect his bows and arrows from some danger. He specifically took his arrow, which was presented to him by Lord Shiva. And while going out, he began to remember Lord Shiva and his great favor. In this way, he took away his bow known as Gandiva, and thus he appeared in front of the maternity hall, equipped with various kinds of weapons, etc. It appears that Arjuna did not leave Dwarka there to fulfill his promise to the Brahmana, and he was called at night when the Brahmana's wife was to deliver the child. Besides that, while going to the Brahmana's place to attend the delivery case of his wife, Arjuna remembered Lord Shiva and not his friend Krishna, thinking that Krishna could not give protection to the Brahmana, so it was better to take shelter of Lord Shiva. This is another instance of how a person takes the shelter of other demigods, which is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. It means that the person who becomes lost of his intelligence out of too much greediness and lust, he forgets the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and takes shelter of other demigods. Of course, Arjuna was not an ordinary living entity, but out of his friendly feelings with Krishna, he thought that Krishna was unable to give protection to the Brahmana, so better he should remember Lord Shiva. But later on, it was proved that Arjuna's taking shelter of Lord Shiva instead of Krishna was not at all successful. Arjuna, however, did his best by chanting different kinds of mantra, taking his arrow up and down to purpose of guarding the maternity home from all directions. Thus, Brahmana's wife delivered a male child, and as usual, the child began to cry over and over again. But only a few minutes after, both the child and the arrows of Arjuna disappeared in the sky. It appears that the Brahmana's house was nearby Krishna's residence, and everything that took place defying the authority of Krishna were enjoyed by the Lord, and he played the trick of taking away again the Brahmana's baby as well as Arjuna's arrows, of which Arjuna was so much proud. It means that people out of bewilderment take shelter of the demigods for some temporary benefit only, which satisfies less intelligent class of men. At that time, in the presence of Lord Krishna and others, the Brahmin began to accuse Arjuna and said, everyone, see my foolishness. I put my faith on the words of Arjuna, who is so important and who is so expert in promising false things. How much foolish I was to believe Arjuna, because he promised to protect my child, who was not protected even by Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna. If such great personalities could not protect my child, who then can be more than them to give protection to my child? I therefore condemn Arjuna for his false promise, and I also condemn his celebrated bow, Gandiva, and his impotency of declaring himself more than Lord Balaram, Krishna, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. How one can save my child, who is already transferred to some other planet? Out of his sheer foolishness, Arjuna wanted to bring back my child from other planet. When Arjuna was thus condemned by the Brahmana, the empowered impressed with mystic yoga perfection so that he could travel to any planet to find out the baby of the Brahmin. It seems that Arjuna also knew the mystic yogic power by which the yogis can travel to any planet they desire. Arjuna first of all went to the planet which is known as Jamaloka, where the superintendent of death, Jamaraj, lives. He searched out there to find the baby of the Brahmana, but he was unable to see him. Then he immediately went to the planet where King of Heaven, Indra, lives. When he was unable to find out the baby there, then he went one after another to the planet of the fire demigod, Nairiti demigod, then to the moon planet, after that to the Vayu Loka, then to the Varuna Loka. When he was unable to find out the baby in those planets, then he went down to the Rasatal planet, the lowest of the planetary system. After traveling all these different planets, then he went to the Brahma Loka, where even the mystic yogis also cannot go. But Arjuna, by the grace of Lord Krishna, got that power, and he went above the heavenly planets to the Brahma Loka. In this way, when he was unable to find out the baby, searching out even all the possible planets, at that time he attempted to enter into the fire, as he had already promised to the Brahmana that on his being unable to bring back his baby, he would enter into the fire. Lord Krishna, however, was very kind upon him, because Arjuna happened to be the most intimate friend of the Lord. So Lord Krishna assured Arjuna not to enter into the fire, so much degradable. Krishna indicated Arjuna that he, being the friend of Krishna, if he would enter into fire, being hopeless, indirectly it would be a blemish on him. But Krishna therefore checked Arjuna, assuring him that he would find out the baby. Do not be prepared foolishly to commit suicide. Next manner, after addressing Arjuna in this way, Lord Krishna called for his transcendental chariot, and he got on it along with Arjuna and began to proceed towards the northern side. Lord Krishna, the all-powerful personality of Godhead, could have brought the child back immediately without any such attempt. But we should always remember that he was playing the part of a human being. As a human being has to endeavor for achieving certain results. Similarly, Lord Krishna also, like ordinary human being, or like his friend Arjuna, he also wanted to go away from Dwarka to bring back the baby of the Brahmana. By his first time as a human being, it is necessary to record in the history of the human society that there was not a single greater personality than Krishna. God is great, and that is the definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, at least within this material world, while he was present, he proved that there was no other greater prosperity than Krishna, even within this universe. Thus, Krishna, on his chariot, along with Arjuna, began to proceed towards the northern direction, crossing over many planetary systems. It is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Saptadipa. Dipa means island. All these planets are sometimes described in the Vedic literature as Deepas. This planet on which we are living is called
jumbled people.
The idea is the whole outer space is taken as a great ocean of air, and within that great ocean of air, there are many islands, and which are the different types of planets. Then each and every planet, there are particular types of oceans also. In some of the planets, there are salted water, and in some of them, the oceans are mint. In others, there are oceans of liquor. In others, there are oceans of ghee or oil. And in such planets, there are different kinds of mountains also. And each and every planet has a different type of atmosphere. This way, Krishna passed over all these planets and reach up to the end of the covering of the universe, enter into it, which is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam as great darkness. This material world as a whole is described as darkness. The open space, there is sunlight, therefore it is illuminated. But in the covering, on account of absence of sunlight, naturally it should be dark. So Krishna enters into the covering layer of this universe, which is described as dark. The four horses which were drawing the chariot of Lord Krishna were named as Shaiva, Sugriva is Megapushpa, Balaha. All these four horses appear to be hesitating to enter into the darkness. This hesitation of the horses to enter into darkness is also a part of the pastime of Lord Krishna, because the horses of Krishna are not ordinary horses. It was not possible for the ordinary horses to go all over the planet and then enter into the outer covering layers of the universe. As Krishna is transcendental, similarly his chariot and his horses, everything, all of them are transcendental, beyond the quality of this material world. As we should always remember that Krishna was playing the part of ordinary human being, his horses also, by the will of Krishna, played such part as ordinary horses hesitate to enter into the darkness. As Krishna is known as Yogeshwara, as it is stated in the last portion of the Bhagavad Gita, Yogeshwara Hari. All kinds of mystic powers are under his control. In our experience, we can see many human beings empowered by the yogic mystic power. Sometimes perform very, very wonderful acts. But Krishna is understood to be master of all mystic power. Therefore, when he saw that his horses were hesitant to proceed into the darkness, he immediately forwarded his disc known as Sudarshan Chakra, and the disc illuminated 1,000 times brighter than the sunlight. This darkness of the covering of the universe is also creation of Krishna, and the Sudarshan Chakra is also the constant companion of Krishna. Thus the darkness was penetrated, keeping the Sudarshan Chakra forward. And it is stated herein in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Sudarshan Chakra began to penetrate through the darkness exactly like the arrow released from the Sangha bow of Lord Ramchandra, penetrated through the army of Ravana. The disc of Lord Krishna, known as Sudarshan, means, Su means very nice, and Darshan means observation. By the grace of Lord Krishna's disc, Sudarshan, anything can be seen very nice. By the grace of Lord Sudarshan's disc, nothing can remain in darkness. In this way, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna crossed over the great darkness region covering the material universe. Arjuna saw the effulgence of light known as Brahma Jyoti. This Brahma Jyoti is situated outside the
governing on this material universes, and because this Brahma Jyoti is not possible to be seen by our present eyes, this Brahma Jyoti is sometimes explained as abhokta. This spiritual effulgence is the ultimate destination of the impersonalist known as Vedantis. This Brahma Jyoti is described as Anantaparam, unlimited and unfathom. So as soon as Lord Krishna or Arjuna reach this region of Brahma Jyoti, Arjuna could not tolerate the glaring effulgence of Brahma Jyoti and closed his eyes. This incident of Lord Krishna and Arjuna's reaching the Brahma Jyoti region is described in Harivamsa. In that portion of the Vedic literature, Krishna informed Arjuna within question, "My dear Arjuna, the glaring effulgence, transcendental light which you are seeing, this is my bodily rays. My dear chief of the descendants of Bharat, this Brahma Jyoti is myself." Question close. "As the sun disk and the sun sign cannot be separated, similarly, Krishna and his bodily rays, the Brahma Jyoti, cannot be separated. As such, Krishna claimed that the Brahma Jyoti is he himself. It is clearly stated in the Harivamsa, Krishna said, Ahamsa. This Brahma Jyoti is also as combination of the minute particles known as spiritual sparks or the living entities known as Chitkan. The Vedic word Soham or I am the Brahma Jyoti can be also be applied to the living entities. The living entities also can claim that I belong to the Brahma Jyoti. The Harivamsa, it is still further explained within quotation. This Brahma Jyoti is expansion of my spiritual energy. Quotation close, continued Krishna. This Brahma Jyoti is beyond the region of my external energy, known as Maya Shakti. When one is situated within this material world, it is not possible to experience this Brahma effulgence. Therefore, in the material world, this effulgence is non-manifest, whereas in the spiritual world, that is manifest. That is the purpose of bhakta abhakta. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, bhaktya bhakta sanatam. Both these energies are eternal, manifested. After this, Lord Krishna or Arjuna entered a vast, extensive spiritual water. This spiritual water is called Karanarnava, ocean or Viraja. It means this ocean is the origin of creation of the material world, and the place is known as Viraja because this place is freed from the influence of the three qualities of material world. In the Mrityunjaya Tantra, Vedic literature, there is a vivid description of this Karana ocean or Viraja, and it is stated that the highest planetary system within the material world is Sattaloka or Brahma Loka. Beyond that, there is Rudra Loka or Mahavishnu Loka. This Mahavishnu Loka is here as it is stated in the Brahma Samhita about the description of Mahavishnu. Yah Karanarnava Jale Bhajati Sma Yogam. Lord Mahavishnu is lying down in this water of Karana, and from his breathing, innumerable universes are coming into existence. And when he withdraws the breathing, innumerable universes go within him. In this way, the material creation is being affected and again being withdrawn. When Lord Krishna and Arjuna entered the water, it appeared that there was a strong hurricane of transcendental effulgence were blowing on, and the water of the Karana ocean was too much agitated. So it was an unique experience of Arjuna by the grace of Lord Krishna that he saw the Karana ocean very, very beautiful. Arjuna, accompanied by Krishna, saw there was a large palace within the water, wherein thousands of pillars and columns were standing made of valuable jewels. The glaring effulgence of those columns were so beautiful that Arjuna became charmed with it. Within that palace, Arjuna and Krishna saw the gigantic form of Anantadeva, who is also known as Shesha. The Anantadeva or Shesha Naga was in the form of great serpent, having thousands of hoods, and each one of them was decorated with valuable jewels, which were dazzling very beautifully and effulgently. Each hood was seen with two eyes, but the eyes of Anantadeva appeared to be very fearful. The body of Anantadeva was as white as the mountain head of Kailash, which is always covered with snow. The neck of Anantadeva was bluish, as well as the tongues were of bluish color. In this way, Arjuna saw the Sheshanaga form, and he saw also that on the very soft white body of Sheshanaga, Lord Mahavishnu was lying down very comfortably. He appeared to be very, very powerful and all-pervading, and he could understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that form is known as Purushottam. He is known as Purushottam, or the best or Supreme Personality of Godhead, because from this form, another form of Vishnu emanates, which is known Garbhodakshai Vishnu, within this material world. This form of the Lord, Purushottam, is beyond the material world. He is known, therefore, Uttam. Uttam means above the darkest region of material world. Tama means darkness, and Ut means above, a transcendental. Arjuna saw that the bodily color of Purushottam Mahavishnu was as dark as a new cloud in the rainy season. He was dressed with very nice clothing of yellow color. His face was always beautiful with smiling attitude, and the lotus beetle-like eyes were very much attractive. Lord Mahavishnu's helmet was bedecked with valuable jewels, and the beautiful earrings on his ears enhanced the beauty of his curling hair on the head. Lord Mahavishnu had eight hands, all very long, up to the limit of the knee, and his neck was decorated with Kaustubh jewels, and his chest was impressed with the symbol of Shiva. The Shiva means the resting place of the goddess of fortune, and the Lord was garlanded with lotus flowers up to the end of his knees. This long garland is known as Vaijayanti garland. The Lord was surrounded by his personal associates known as Nanda, Sunanda, and the Sudarshan disc was also standing as personified, and as it is stated in the Vedas, that the Lord has immense and unlimited number of energies. They were also standing there, personified, and the chief of them were known as Pushti, or the energy for nourishment. Three are the energy for beauty. Kirti are the energy of reputation, and Aja are the energy of material creation. All these energies are invested in the brahmanas of the material world, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, or the king of the heavenly planets, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, sun god, Yadarvas, all these demigods being empowered by the Lord with these energies are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of God. This Mahavishnu feature is expansion of Krishna's body. This is also confirmed in the Brahma Sanghita that the Mahavishnu is the part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. But all such expansions are non-different. Still, as Krishna appeared within this material world to manifest his pastime as human being, so Lord Krishna and Arjuna immediately offered their respect to Lord Mahavishnu by bowing down before him. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Krishna offered respect to Mahavishnu. That means he offered obeisances unto him only, because Lord Mahavishnu is not different from him. This offering of obeisances by Krishna to Mahavishnu is not, however, a form of worship known as Ahangra Upasana. This Ahangra Upasana is sometimes recommended for persons who are trying to elevate themselves to the spiritual world by performing the sacrifice of knowledge. This is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Jnana Yajna Chappanne Yajanta Maham Upasate. For Lord Krishna, although there was no necessity of offering obeisances, but still, because he is the master teacher, he taught Arjuna how respect should be offered to Lord Mahavishnu. Arjuna, however, was very much afraid to see the gigantic form and everything distinct from the material experience. So when Arjuna saw that Krishna offered obeisances to Lord Mahavishnu, he immediately followed him and stood before the Lord with folded hands. After this, the great gigantic form of Mahavishnu, with great pleasure and pleasing attitude, began to smile and speak as follows within quotation. My dear Krishna and Arjuna, I was very much anxious to see you both, and therefore I arranged to take away the babies of the Brahmins and keep them here, so that I was expecting to see you both at this place. You have appeared on the material world as my incarnation in order to minimize the overburden of the world due to overgrowth of demoniac persons. Now, after killing all these unwanted demons, you will please again come back to me again. Both of you are incarnation of the great sage Narunara. Even though both of you are complete in yourself, still, for the protection of the devotees and annihilation of the demons, especially to establish the religious principles in the world so that peace and tranquility may continue, you are teaching the factual basic principles of religion so that the people of the world may follow you and thereby let there be peace and prosperity. After this, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna offered their obeisances to Lord Mahavishnu, and taking delivery of the children of the Brahmins, they again returned back to Dwarka via the same route and ways as they entered in the spiritual world previously. All the children of the Brahmins had duly grown up to the respective ages. There was no defense of their identification from the shape and color during the time of their birth. Lord Krishna and Arjuna after returning at Dwarka, the Brahmin was delivered of all his sons. Arjun was, however, struck with great wonder after visiting the transcendental world by the grace of Lord Krishna. And by the grace of Krishna, he could understand that whatever opulence may be there within this material world, it is due to Krishna's mercy. One should therefore be always in Krishna consciousness, in complete gratefulness to Lord Krishna, because whatever one may possess, it is all bestowed by Lord Krishna. This wonderful experience of Arjuna due to the mercy of Krishna is one of the many thousands of pastimes performed by Lord Krishna during his stay within this material world. All of them were unique and without any parallel in the history of the world. All these pastimes prove fully that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is still, while he was present within this material world, he played actually just like an ordinary man, has so many worldly duties in different position of status quo, played the part of an ideal householder, although he possessed 15,000 wives and 16,000 palaces and relative children also. Still, he performed many sacrifices just to teach the royal order how to live in the material world for the welfare of greater humanity. As an ideal supreme personality, he fulfilled the desires of everyone, beginning from the Brahmin, the highest position in the human society, down to the ordinary living entities, including the fourth and fifth grade persons. As King Indra is in charge of distribution of rains all over the world, and he satisfied in due course everyone by pouring down rain. Similarly, Lord Krishna satisfied everyone by pouring down his causeless mercy. His mission was to give protection to the devotees and to kill the demoniac kings. So he killed so many hundreds and thousands of demons. Some of them were killed personally by him, and some of them were killed by deputing Arjuna to do the act. In this way, he established many pious kings like Yudhishthir on the helm of the world affair. Thus, by his divine arrangement, they were of all peace and tranquility under good government headed by King Yudhishthir. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 8th chapter of Krishna in the matter of the super excellence power of Krishna.